Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. Our program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Every day, we bring you news and information about America and the world. This is what you will hear on our program. We remember the life of First Lady Barbara Bush. Then, our technology report. Next, hear more about the history of the American West on our Making of a Nation series. But first, this report. U.S. President Donald Trump confirmed Wednesday his Central Intelligence Agency chief secretly met with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Trump wrote on Twitter, "Mike Pompeo met with Kim Jong-un in North Korea last week. Meeting went very smoothly, and a good relationship was formed." The president added, "Details of summit are being worked out now. Denuclearization will be a great thing for the world, but also for North Korea." Trump had said on Tuesday the United States and North Korea had talks at the highest level. He said the two sides are considering five places for his meeting with Kim, which could take place by early June. Pompeo is Trump's nominee as Secretary of State, the nation's top diplomatic position. Pompeo has said he hopes the two leaders can have that conversation and will set us down the course of achieving a diplomatic outcome that America and the world so desperately need. He spoke last week at a Senate hearing on his nomination. Trump also said he supported South Korea's plan to negotiate an official end to the Korean War. South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim are set to meet on April 27th. A South Korean official said Wednesday that peace talks are a possible subject. But the discussion of officially ending the war would need to involve the other countries, like the U.S. and China. After news reports of Pompeo's meeting with Kim, China said it welcomes direct contact and talks between the U.S. and North Korea. China's foreign ministry said it hopes the two sides will resolve tensions on the Korean Peninsula and set up a plan for peace. The two Koreas are technically still in a state of war. The 1950 to 1953 Korean War ended with a ceasefire, not a peace treaty. Trump's comments came during his two-day meeting in Florida with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Abe praised the U.S. president for his position on North Korea's nuclear weapons and missile programs. He said, "Donald, you demonstrated your unwavering determination in addressing the challenge of North Korea." The Prime Minister also raised issues of concern to Japan, including North Korea's kidnapping of Japanese citizens. I'm Mario Ritter.
Barbara Bush died Tuesday at her home in Texas. She was 92 years old. Her husband of 73 years, former United States President George H.W. Bush, was with her at the time. Barbara Bush reportedly suffered from problems with her heart and lungs. Just 2 days earlier, her family had announced that her health was getting worse, and she had decided to stop receiving medical treatment. Barbara Pierce Bush was born in 1925 in New York. Her father published magazines for women. Her mother was active in community service. Young Barbara Pierce was admitted as a student at Smith College in Massachusetts. While there, she met George Herbert Walker Bush. They married in 1945. She and George Bush went on to have 6 children. Their second child died of cancer at age 3. Their oldest child, George Walker Bush, went on to become the 43rd president. As such, Barbara Bush is one of 2 women in U.S. history to be both the wife and mother of a president. The other was Abigail Adams, who died 200 years ago in 1818. Bush was known to be a strong supporter of her husband and family. As recently as 2016, she campaigned for her son Jeb, who was competing against Donald Trump and others for the Republican Party's nomination for president. As First Lady, Bush was known for her commitment to literacy. She set up an organization to support reading skills, especially among young children. Anne Bush was known for her physical appearance and funny way of speaking. Her brown hair began to turn gray when her daughter was sick with cancer. Bush was not yet 30, yet she refused to color her hair to appear younger. In time, her hair became all white. She said it helped people see her as everybody's grandmother. Bush was also linked to a necklace she often wore. The piece of jewelry was made of 3 lines of pearls. Many Americans noted approvingly that the pearls were not real, although Bush's family was wealthy and she could buy fine jewels. And some liked the reason Bush gave for wearing the necklace. She said it hid the wrinkles in her neck. These details and others helped give Bush a public image as someone who seemed to be an ordinary person with common sense. Barbara Bush was also sometimes criticized for speaking in a way that seemed sharp or insensitive to others. But this week, famous Americans have only kind words for the former First Lady. President Donald Trump called her a supporter of the American family. Former President Barack Obama noted her generosity, humility, and decency. Former President Bill Clinton, who defeated Bush's husband when he sought re-election, called Barbara Bush a remarkable woman. She had grit and grace, brains and beauty. And former President George W. Bush said this, "Mom kept us on our toes and kept us laughing until the end. I'm a lucky man that Barbara Bush was my mother. Our family will miss her dearly, and we thank you for all your prayers and good wishes. Her funeral will take place Saturday in Houston, Texas. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Artificial intelligence, or AI, has arrived on the farm. A Dutch company has developed technology to follow the movements and activities of cows. The high-tech system, powered by AI and motion sensors, is called the Intelligent Dairy Farmer's Assistant. The company, Connectera, launched the system in the United States in December 2017, after several years of testing and operations in Europe. A device is put around the neck of the cow to record its movements. This information is then processed by a computer that uses AI to learn about the animal's behavior over time. The system can tell farmers what the cow is doing in real time. This information can help predict when cattle get sick, become less productive, or are ready for mating. Richard Watson owns the Seven Oaks Dairy in Waynesboro, Georgia. He was one of the first American farmers to use the high-tech system.
It can pick up whether the cow is eating, whether it's ruminating, whether it's walking, whether it's drinking, whether it's laying down, standing up.
Watson said the system is a big help because it is impossible for farmers to keep up with the activities of each cow individually. He added that having a computer identify which of his 2,000 cattle need attention could help improve farm productivity by up to 10%. He estimates this difference could greatly increase his profits.
Just a 10% or 5% increase or improvement in productivity means hundreds of thousands of dollars to us, aside from the fact that we just want happier, healthier, more welfare in our animals anyway.
Watson says he sees the technology being used in many large farming systems if it continues to be successful over time. The founder and head of Connectera is Yasser Kokar. He says the idea for the system came while he was living on a dairy farm south of Amsterdam. It turns out the technology farmers use is really outdated in many respects, Kokar told the Associated Press. He added that most of the technology that does exist is difficult to use. He says modern agriculture greatly needs new technology like this. The company says information about the cows can be collected and seen on a cell phone or other mobile device. A text message can also inform farmers of concerns involving the animals. Some American farmers are using other sensor equipment to receive messages about their cows. Mukal, a business based in Ireland, says its products can send farmers a text message when their cows are ready to give birth. A device put on the cow's tail measures the number of contractions to predict the most likely time of birth. The company also sells a product called Mukal Heat. It says this device uses temperature sensors to predict the exact time a female is in heat, the time that she is ready for mating. Mary Mackinson Faber is a fifth-generation farmer who lives near Pontiac, Illinois. She said such devices could be great tools to inform farmers about the condition of their cows before problems happen.
That if a cow is calving, it'll shoot us a text and we can, you know, come out here and check on it.
Faber added that while the technology is a very useful tool, she believes it will always take more than machines to do what is right for the animals.
There's certain tasks that it can help with and it can assist us, but I don't think it'll ever replace the human.
I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. During the 1800s, the federal government forced Native American Indians to live in special areas. These were called reservations. The Indians no longer could move freely over the Great Plains to hunt buffalo. White men were settling there. The situation resulted in violence. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe continue the story of these Western wars.
The government sent soldiers to force the Indians to move to reservations. But the soldiers could not keep them there. Groups of Indians would leave the reservations in the spring. They followed the buffalo across the plains. Some raided the homes of white settlers. They stole horses and cattle. At the end of the summer, the Indians would return to the reservations, and the government would give them food for the winter.
As years passed, fewer Indians left the reservations to live the old life on the plains. It became difficult to find buffalo. The plains were becoming empty. Only a few years before, millions of buffalo lived on the Great Plains. Then railroads were built across the country. White men came to claim the grasslands. They put up fences. Cowboys came up from Texas with huge groups of cattle. They forced the buffalo away or killed them. The Indians tried to prevent this killing. Angry groups of Indians often attacked white buffalo hunters. But the army was too strong. Soldiers killed or captured many Indians. Finally, most Indians gave up the struggle. They surrendered their guns and horses. They went back to the reservations and became farmers.
All this was taking place in what is now the south central part of the United States. Far to the north, another struggle was taking place involving the Great Sioux Indian tribe. The Sioux had signed a treaty with the government in 1868. The treaty gave them a large reservation in what is now Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wyoming. The Black Hills in Dakota were part of the reservation. These hills were important to the Sioux. In their religion, the Black Hills were a holy place. They were the center of their world, where the gods lived. They were the place where Indian fighters went to speak with the Great Spirit.
In 1873, the Black Hills suddenly became important to white men, too. Gold was discovered there. Treaties and religion meant nothing to the white miners who rushed to the Black Hills to search for gold. At first, the Indians killed some of the miners. They chased others away. But more miners came. The Sioux tribe asked the government to enforce the treaty. Tribal leaders asked the government to keep white men away from the reservation. The army sent soldiers to remove the miners. The soldiers ordered the miners to leave, but they made no effort to enforce the order. Again, the Indians protested. This time, the government sent officials to negotiate a new treaty. It asked the Sioux Indians to give up the Black Hills. Some of the Indian leaders refused to negotiate. One who rejected the invitation was Sitting Bull. "I do not want to sell any land to the government," Chief Sitting Bull said. He held a little dust between his fingers. "Not even this much."
This resistance did not stop government efforts to get the Black Hills for the miners. The War Department sent General George Crook to punish the Indians and force them back to their reservation. Crook led a large force into Sioux country. He surprised an Indian village, capturing hundreds of horses. There was another clash a few months later. This time, the result was very different. The Indians gave the army its worst defeat in almost a century.
The battle took place near the Little Bighorn River. General George Custer led 212 soldiers in search of the Indian leader Crazy Horse. As General Custer moved through the river valley, he sent men ahead to explore the area. His men returned with reports that thousands of Indians were waiting to attack. Custer refused to listen. He pushed forward. Soon his forces were surrounded by Indians. In less than an hour, the Indians killed the general and every one of his men. The white soldiers lay dead at Little Bighorn. And Custer's name would go down in history as a symbol of foolish pride in battle. The battle at Little Bighorn was a serious defeat for the United States Army. But the Indians' victory did not last long. Within a year, the Army forced most of the Sioux to surrender. It took the Black Hills for the miners. It moved the Indians to a new reservation.
In the next few years, the same thing happened to other Indian tribes throughout the West. Under great pressure from white settlers, the government took land from the Indians and opened it to settlement. The size of Indian reservations was reduced, again and again. One by one, the Indian tribes of the West changed. Their fierce fighters became farmers who needed government help. They were weak and broken in spirit. One Indian leader named Black Elk described the situation best. He was a survivor of a battle at a place called Wounded Knee. Many Indian women and children had died there. Years later, Black Elk said, "I did not know then how much was ended. When I look back now from this high hill of my old age, I can still see the dead lying all over the ground. And I can see that something else died there in the bloody mud and was buried. A people's dream died there."
Some Indians turned to religion during this difficult time. An Indian religious leader named Wovoka gained influence. Wovoka declared that the Great Spirit had chosen him to prepare the Indians for a new world. He said the new world would arrive soon, and it would be a wonderful world. "There would be no white men," he said, "and all dead Indians would come back to life." Wovoka warned that new soil would rise up and cover the world like a flood. He said Indians could escape destruction by dancing a special dance. It was called the Ghost Dance. Wovoka said the ghost dance would make Indians powerful. He said it would even protect them from bullets fired by the white men's guns.
Thousands of Indians in the American West listened to Wovoka's message. They believed him, and they began to dance for long hours every day. On the Sioux reservations, all other activities stopped. Children no longer went to school. No one did anything but dance. All this frightened white officials. They tried to arrest some Indian leaders to stop the dancing. The arrests led to fighting, and the fighting led to a final battle in which the army defeated the Indians completely. The Indian wars were over. Wovoka himself told his followers, "Our trails are covered with grass and sand. We cannot find them. Today, I call upon you to travel a new trail. It is the only trail now open, the white man's road."
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from America and around the world.